Have you been injured at work and need help getting the benefits you deserve? Call me, attorney Steve Marte, at 312-312-HURT for a free consultation. That's 312-312-HURT. I will personally handle your claim from start to finish. Call me, Steve Marte, today.
Miss a show? All your faves ready and waiting on the ESPN Chicago app.
You are listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
2-1, and there's a base hit out in the left center. Dozier on his way to third, and he's going to be sent by Vance Wilson. Here's a throw to the plate, and he's going to be out. They tried the sneak attack as that throw kind of dribbled into Leury, and Leury then fired to McGuire to end the inning.
Yeah, great communication to Garcia to let him know, quickly turn and throw that ball to the plate.
Second and third, two outs. 3-2 to Abreu. Lined out in the left center for a base hit. Both runs will score. Abreu will have a double, and it's 3-0. That's the Jose Abreu we know.
There's some runs batted in. Big ol' Abreu smile at second base.
The Sox win 3-0 over the Royals. A little sneak attack action the Royals tried to get in there, according to Len. That never worked when you were a kid, did it?
No, the sneak attack, well, you were never stealth enough as a kid. You were probably making too much noise. You were a mouth breather at the time. I heard you coming a mile away.
The sneak attack was usually a move a little brother would make, right?
Yes. By the way, is Kansas City American League for Cincinnati? Is that what that is?
Yeah, they're not good this year. They were supposed to be a little bit better than they are.
Listen, that's one of those you take the W, you run, you don't make any excuses. But I just kept feeling like the Sox quit playing with fire, quit giving these Royals a chance, because eventually they're going to, and they didn't, Sox get the W.
Well, they got burned late yesterday.
They did.
Again, like, now they did win these last two, so I
absolutely.
I'm not trying to be negative here. They are a game over 500 now at 18-17. These are the games that they should win, and Dylan Cease sparkled again. Abdallah's been preaching for weeks about the Dylan Cease over total on his strikeouts, and that was another easy one. I think he struck out 9.
You know what he did today that was so impressive to me? That maybe he wasn't his dominant self. Like, I think the Royals had the leadoff guy on in 6 or 7 of the 9 innings, and he found himself occasionally in trouble. But because he's matured and he's learned how to pitch and not just throw, he finds his way out of trouble more frequently than he used to as a younger pitcher.
Sure, which wiggle your way out. Joe Kelly did that too.
There's no question. There's no question. You put yourself in a mess. You got to pull yourself out. And there was a couple examples of the White Sox pitchers doing that today.
Would it surprise you to know that Dylan Cease now leads the majors with 67 strikeouts in 43.2 innings pitched?
No, it doesn't surprise me. I would say if not Cease, it's his former rotation mate, Carlos Rodon. That would have been my guess.
How's he done in the last week or so?
Rodon?
The last I checked in, he's been great.
He got lit up on Sunday Night Baseball.
Okay, so that was his last one. So was that the first not so good outing
it was.
Rodon?
He came into that game on Sunday night with, I think, the best ERA in the National League. And now his ERA after getting hit up by the Cardinals, I think it's up to almost 3.5.
He's 3.5. He's 3.49, and he is fourth in all of Major League Baseball with 56 strikeouts.
Okay. So if you want to talk Sox, if you want to talk anything on your mind, we're uninterrupted until Connor is back at 5:30 with the next pregame show. It's a weird week. It's a weird day. It's a doubleheader here in Kansas City. Well, we're not in Kansas City, but in
Are you in Kansas City?
No,
did you take
not
a flight to Kansas City?
Kansas, it's like here on the radio station, but in Kansas City. And the Sox are a game above 500. But
did you ever go to a game in Kansas City?
I've
in any
never
sport?
Been to any game never? Of any note in Kansas City. No.
Arrowhead was one of those, you know, you always talk about outdoor stadiums that are loud and they sound like they're indoor stadiums. Arrowhead was always one of them in Kansas
Supposed
City.
To be one of the best venues in all of football.
Fantastic.
From it the tailgate fantastic. to the atmosphere at the game, I've always heard good things about it.
Yeah,
is it Kansas City known for their also their fountains? Is that the Fountain City? Don't they have millions of fountains all over town?
I know Cincinnati's got plenty of fountain. We got Fountain Square. We got a fountain a little bit everywhere. They're known for their barbecue, Kansas City.
Yes,
that's
they
what
are.
I thought you were going to say.
And a quarterback.
Fountain, I don't know if it's Fountain City.
Well, there's a Fountain City, Wisconsin.
Okay.
It's the actual city named
is.
Fountain City, Wisconsin.
Google. I seem to remember Len Casper giving out a nugget.
It is Kansas City, the city of fountains.
Oh, look, there
it's
you go.
Said to have
See?
More fountains than Rome.
How about that?
I don't know.
That
See,
is good.
I think if you're Fountain City, Wisconsin, you better get after it and start building some more fountains around town.
There are 10 people
you know what that
in
means?
Fountain City, Wisconsin.
You know what that means? If you're the Fountain City, you got high water bills. That's what it means. It means exactly that's what you
Unless
have.
Maybe you're just redoing the same water and it's just filtering all the way through. Is that
Could
possible?
Be, but then you got
Does
high electric bills.
Yeah.
Then you got high electricity bills as you're making sure that the fountains are shooting water.
You
Living
know
that
about
fountain
that.
Life.
You know about that fountain life. I was gonna
like Forest, telling Illinois. You.
Mine's leaking right now. Mine is not functioning correctly.
Oh, so yeah, and you heard in the highlight there too, Len Casper talk about Abreu. Abreu came through with a hit, a couple of hits today, drove in a big run, and they just seem though still that they haven't hit their stride by any means.
No.
Hitting the baseball, they put up three, and usually they'll get the runs early, and then they sort of just nap. You know,
throw it in neutral.
Yeah, they put it in neutral, and they hope their pitching is good enough. You know, Cueto yesterday was fantastic. I mean, think about this. The way their starting pitching has come through. I mean, for Cueto to come up from AAA and to do what he did yesterday, again, it's the Royals, but he still did it. Cease today, 5 2/3, wanted to finish that sixth inning. Did you see he was not happy with Tony?
No.
Most pitchers aren't. And so 5 2/3, no runs, 9 strikeouts, 2 walks, 7 hits, 94 pitches. He lowered his ERA to 3.09.
And listen, you mentioned Cueto. His line was equally, if not more impressive. 6 innings, 2 hits, no runs, and 7 Ks for a guy that was making his first major league start of this season. Boy, did he give them a boost yesterday.
For someone who has watched Johnny Cueto for a long time, but hasn't followed closely like you because he was on the Reds and everything. It was just like every now and then when he would face the Cubs.
Yeah.
You know, I've always known about the shimmies like Connor was talking about and the misdirections and changing each windup. Is that ad-libbed? Or does he have a plan going into each pitch? Or is it like on a dunk where you just kind of do what you do while you're in midair? How does Cueto work that out?
I've always thought it was freestyling, and maybe Meller knows better than I, but I think that he just likes to mix it up. Who's the lefty that they just faced from the Yankees who does some of the same stuff? It's not quite as pronounced, but
Nestor Cortez.
Yeah, Cortez he'll change the pace in which he delivers the baseball, won't he?
Yeah.
From batter to batter sometime.
Now, I don't know if it's a before every pitch, if he knows exactly how many shimmies he's going to go with. Is he thinking that through along with the actual pitch when they're deciding what they're going to go with? That I'm not quite sure of. You would think just freestyling it up there would lead to more balks.
Last night, Len noted through his first 14 pitches, he had already had about 6 or 7 different deliveries.
That's what I'm saying. It seems like a different one every time, like a snowflake. Like none is quite the same. But that
there
was my dumb thought of the day as I was listening. I'm like, is he mapping this out? Does he say before the pitch, like, I'm throwing a fastball and I'm going to pump it a couple of times before I deliver?
I think he's freestyling. I think there was a time, I didn't know, I didn't hear what the conversation was about, but the umpire, the plate umpire, went and talked to him about something at one point last night, didn't he?
Was it because he planted his foot maybe before he should have? Like when a runner wasn't.
But you're right, Sylvie. When there are runners on base, I mean, you would think that he would be more, you know, more traditional with his delivery because otherwise you are bringing a balk into the equation.
I mean, he's only got 16 career balks in 15 seasons of pitching.
That still sounds like a lot, doesn't it?
I mean, but when you consider how many times he goes to it throughout,
fun. It makes it fun.
When you guys were in Little League Baseball, that was our move. Like, we didn't even really need to do it because we were a pretty powerhouse team. But when the opposing pitcher was a kid, Alex Higdon. He ended up playing, I think he played, where did he play? He played at Ohio State, played football at Ohio State, and then was drafted and played for the Falcons in football. He was this giant kid in Little League Baseball. He threw gas past us. It was the only pitcher we couldn't hit. So what we resorted to, because we were little wise asses back in Sharonville, as soon as he'd get into his windup and we had a runner on base, we'd all scream balk and he would stop his delivery.
So you balked him into balking.
We balked him into balk. He'd get into his windup and he'd try to, he'd start to deliver the pitch and we'd all scream balk and he'd stop. And we would, you'd advance.
Weren't you worried that he was going to kick your ass after the game? He was a big dude.
No question. No question. He looked like the kid from the Bad News Bears, but he was giant. He had long hair and he was bigger, like twice the size of all of us.
Kelly? Are you talking about like a bigger Kelly?
Yeah, he was a bigger sized Kelly. Like I said, he ended up playing tight end in the NFL, and he was just throwing BBs past us.
Wow.
Oh, it was unbelievable. So we resorted to the ball call. I don't know if maybe, do you think they do that in the bigs? Guys, you know, if you
need. I don't think.
No, just at the top step. I bet you Tony's done it before. Come on.
Probably.
I bet you Tony's done it.
It's the red-ass meathead man. Now, they're friends because they obviously, Matheny learned from Tony, but it's Matheny against La Russa. There's some red-ass in those dugouts, in both dugouts. You know that
there's not
for
a
sure.
It's not a happy moment throughout the day with the two of those.
By the way, you're listening to WMVP Chicago and WSHE HD2 Chicago. It's Waddle and Sylvie till 5:30 if you want to weigh in, 312-332-3776. Connor up with Sox pregame number 2 at 5:30. So, you know, that's the latest with the Sox. They win 3-0. I still think when they start hitting, you know, the way they're pitching, that's when it comes together. They're still, I still have questions about their lineup as far as where Tony's placing them. I don't for the life of me understand how A.J. Pollock ever should get more bats in a game than Luis Robert. I mean, Luis Robert and Abreu, no matter how much he's struggling, should always bat in front of A.J. Pollock. Pollock batted second today. Luis Robert came in with that hit streak. He's been raking. It's just math. The higher up in the order, the more at bats for Robert is guaranteed. So, but it didn't bite him. But still, I think it's just
what is
weird.
The rationale? I mean, like, listen, if you try to talk this through, is it that you're trying to get him on track? I don't know what it would be. Are you trying to get him more at bats so that you
maybe,
can get
but
him
you know
on
what
track?
It is? I believe, I could be wrong, but I still think there's that old school mentality in Tony La Russa, whether or not he'd actually admit it out loud.
We're going to protect him, the guys behind him.
Or just that A.J. Pollock is your more traditional number two hitter who could get Tim Anderson over into scoring position if Tim Anderson leads the game off with a single. And that just flies in the face of general analytics of what you're talking about, Sylvie, where you want your best hitters to be in the 2 and 3 spots in the order, which in this case would be Luis Robert, and in all likelihood, even though he's coming around, but Jose Abreu. You want those guys hitting 2-3 behind Tim Anderson so that, like you just said, no matter what, they get the most at-bats in your lineup in every game.
Remember there was a game earlier where Leury Garcia batted second, and I think he was batting in front of Robert and Abreu. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's when Abreu was hitting third and Robert fourth. Like, I don't get it. Yesterday, you know, Keith Law was going after La Russa for Andrew Vaughn batting ninth. He says no way he should bat ninth. But La Russa was talking about the old school ways of having a good hitter batting ninth. So that's why it's like having two leadoff hitters. But all you're doing is you're taking longer to get to a good bat in Andrew Vaughn because he's buried at the bottom of the order. So
when your team is collectively hitting 224, and really the only guys that have hit their weight, Tim has been really good. His batting average is exceptional. Robert has been hot, and it's been Vaughn. And Vaughn has dipped a little bit, but those are the only three bats that have really given you anything consistently. I would think you would want to get them as many at-bats as humanly possible.
Especially when he's super hot. I mean, he's your best hitter anyway.
And the one thing I'll say is, like, when Moncada's in the lineup, it doesn't bother me as much because I know he'll see a lot of pitches generally, and he can coax a walk, and he's a switch hitter, so he's a lefty to break up the order. So I'm okay when Moncada's in the lineup if he's hitting second. That it doesn't bother me as much. But when you're moving guys like A.J. Pollock or Leury Garcia into the second spot in the lineup, I mean, it's actually hindering your ability to win games. You might win despite it, but you're actually, I think, lessening your chance to win games.
I hope this is the reverse of last year. Real quick, like last year, this team had us so jazzed up and ready to go, and in the second half, they didn't play good baseball. If they just have this kind of baseball malaise until the All-Star break, and then for some reason, it's a flip of last season, and they get hot and they play better baseball in the second half, I'll be just fine. Right now, I feel like this team hasn't changed a lick from the team we saw from the All-Star break on last year.
Yeah, yeah. But they have the, like we talked about yesterday, they still are a good team, and they can do damage in the postseason because they're pitching. But right now, you'd like to see them play better. I think that's the fairest way to say it. Any White Sox fan isn't watching them saying, well, this is who I thought they would be so far this year. That can be all true. Yes, they can peak at the right time. They can still do damage. They need to play better baseball right now. 312-332-3776. Bears are on the grass today, Waddle.
Oh, I love it. What did we learn anything from today's practices? I was reading a lot of what was taking place on Twitter. I hear the cornerback that they drafted, Kyler Gordon, has caught the attention of Matt Eberflus and the staff. It sounds like it always is in the OTAs, everything is blue sky and sunshine. Everything is soft serve ice cream and wine. It's all delicious.
But yeah, why not? I mean, you're just starting out. Eberflus, yeah, I think this is what you're alluding to. Matt Eberflus said, I think this is from Courtney Cronin's feed. Matt Eberflus said rookie cornerback Kyler Gordon has been, quote, lighting it up in the last 2 days of OTAs. The coaches have been very impressed with his hawking ball skills.
Hey, guys, real quick, I need a clarification here because Tyler was unsure, too. Did you say soft serve ice cream and wine?
Yeah.
Is that a combination?
It's a float. It's a wine float.
Listen, do you like both?
I do. I've never comboed them together.
Why is root beer and ice cream a good combo? Yeah.
Well, I've tried it. I've never tried wine and soft serve ice cream. Is this something am I missing out?
I don't think you need to pour the wine over the soft serve ice cream. If you've got yourself a nice soft serve ice cream cone in one hand and a nice glass of Cabernet in the other, I think you're the king of the universe at that point.
I don't know, man. Some things don't blend well together. Some things are excellent by themselves.
I could give you an example. You could have a handful of dirt over here and pickle juice over here. Like
it might taste better than wine and soft serve ice cream together.
Waddle does like pickle juice popsicles,
I do love pickle juice popsicles.
Am I out of line here, Sylvie? Is that a combination that you would put together?
Well, look, we know this. Waddle's a bad dessert guy. There's not many things Waddle's bad at. He's good at everything. He's a smart guy. He's put together. He's a great dad. He's a great husband. And the one thing that I've always circled over the 15 years is the dude doesn't know desserts. He doesn't know what to order, how to order. He doesn't eat it. He doesn't like it. And so when he suggests ice cream and wine, I don't know if that's in it, if like a float, if you're suggesting, or if you're just saying, look, the wine's still flowing when the dessert course comes.
Of course
and you're,
it is.
You're good with that. But Meller, we've witnessed it. I've told the story many times with him trying to order dessert. It's like it's nothing that I've ever seen before.
That's right. And we have seen firsthand the ice cream is a particular weak spot for him. So, all right. I'm sorry.
That's his kryptonite. Listen, kryptonite is ordering dessert or eating ice cream. He doesn't know
what to do.
Listen,
you critical high cholesterol fat ass partners of mine, okay? Like maybe you should push yourself away from the dessert tray a little more frequently so that you can be healthier, all right?
Look, I mean, you got the big belly going these days,
hey,
champ.
Hey, man,
so.
It's not a big belly.
I'm not the one suggesting a wine and soft serve pairing, so.
That's when life is good, is when they're bringing you soft serve ice cream and as much wine as you want.
You know there are going to be some of our listeners, because they always take your advice, Waddle. A lot of our listeners back in the day started drinking scotch because you were always so high on it. There are going to be some listeners this weekend who are going to try ice cream and wine. If you do so, tweet it out to us so we can get that.
I mean, honestly, we should do it when we're back in studio on Twitch for people.
Friday.
Let's do it on Friday.
Wine and soft serve Friday.
So, yeah, we've got weird schedules here. So the Sox start again at 5:30. Tomorrow, remember, is spring trading. Let me see if I could get this off of memory. So we've got Cap and Abdallah in the morning, correct? And
yes.
Cap's usual slot, and it's the slot that Abdallah worked with you, Waddle, last
yes.
week. Those
and
two
wrestle.
Will be together, and yeah, that should be a good wrestling match tomorrow.
And wrestle. I think Abdallah's wearing his wrestling singlet for tomorrow's show.
He wrestled 1 year in high school.
Yes.
I hope there is some wrestling in that. And then at noon to 2, with you going to Boston to obviously pay tribute to your father-in-law, Gino Cappelletti, I am filling in for you with Carmen DeFalco. So it's
saving
the
music.
We're going to save the music. It's the old Sylvia and Carmen show.
That's awesome.
Noon to 2 tomorrow. And then 2 to 6, let's see. This is Hoodie and Yurko.
Yes.
That should be a good listen. Lots
That'll
of good
awesome.
Stories at the spot right here, 2 to 6. And then 6 to 6:30 before the White Sox game, I'll be back with Chris Black. So it will be Black. And Black both times has drawn his normal show of 6. And this is a short show, so we'll be 6 to 6:30.
And you guys will be giving a complete preview for another thrilling Sox and Royals.
It's what I do best. It's what I do best, yeah. Before we get to the Bears in all seriousness, I just saw this that Tyler put up on my screen. And, you know, I was my bets have been terrible, though I did hit the Cease bet today on the over strikeouts. I was thinking about playing Miami, that Boston would be a team that had to go 7, put a lot of emotion into that game. Now Miami has home court, and maybe they would jump on him. Miami's a tough team to figure out. But now I'm kicking myself because Tyler's telling me that Marcus Smart and Al Horford are both out tonight.
Wow.
Smart has
that.
A foot sprain. I don't know when that happened, and Horford is in health and safety protocols. Ooh. And I just read a quote this morning, Waddle, from a player or somebody said, this is going to be getting dicey again.
Yeah.
Where in the football playoffs, we had very low positivity rates at that time. Mm-hmm. That we were in our sweet spot, I think, where the numbers were really going down. No one was testing positive. So I don't believe it affected any teams. But now here, we saw that Zach tested positive.
Yes.
We could see this affect one of these Final Four teams in a big moment here.
Yeah, there was when Zach had to miss a game. That was the first thought that went through my mind. Is this going to be an isolated incident, or is in fact this is going to be the beginning of a trend? I wondered why the line was what it was. I think that the Celtics are the better team, but without Smart, without Holford, I don't know where I put my money. I probably still bet the Celtics.
You think
so? Crazy?
You don't think they have an emotional letdown after beating the Bucks in 7? You think they maybe are in better rhythm and just continue to play?
Yeah, I mean, the Heat are still going to be without Kyle Lowry, right? So, I just think that the Celtics.
Let me see the line here.
That's a big loss, though. That you're losing the Defensive Player of the Year with Marcus Smart and against a team with a lot of guards.
Horford's playing his best basketball too.
By the way, I've seen today's injury report brought to you by Rush University System for Health. Don't let COVID-19 sideline you this season. Rush encourages everyone to get vaccinated, wear a mask, and don't delay your care in person or virtually. Rush is here for you. Visit rush.edu.
I see the Celtics right now getting 4, which I think is a movement of 2.5 points.
I'll take that. I'll take those points.
So they're plus 4.
So that's your play tonight. You're
plus 160 on the money line for the Celtics. You
know,
like that
wise. You know what I said the other day is I actually think that having watched pretty much every minute of both the Mavs playoffs and the Warriors playoff games, I think the Mavs have been significantly more impressive consistently than the Warriors. I think the Mavericks are going to beat the Warriors in this series. Now you watch the Warriors will sweep them 4-0, but like I think the Mavericks are going to win this series.
It's just because you don't think the Warriors are playing good basketball? They've been tested a lot?
They don't have any real size. They don't, like they're hot and cold. I thought Poole, who was so good at the end of the year, kind of got taken out of the game because the Grizzlies got kind of physical. Like the Grizzlies throw Bane and Brooks at you, and that's like we talked the other day. There's like a couple of linebackers, and they were able to take Poole, I thought, out of the game. I don't know if the Mavericks will present the same challenge, but You know, to me, Doncic has been the best player in the postseason, and the ancillary players have really stepped up, and they've made shots, and Brunson has been, you know, significantly better than I ever thought he would be. So, you know, I know that the Warriors have that rich history, and Steph can still light it up, but I just think that the Mavericks are going to get out of this series and represent the West in the finals.
All right, let's get to the Bears. That we touched on the Bears. Yes, the ice cream and wine analogy that Waddle made, the soft serve and wine. Yeah. So, yes, Eberflus was raving about Kyler Gordon. And, you know, that's the most polarizing because of what they took in this 2 second-round picks, a defensive back, two defensive backs, one corner, one safety. I saw two on Courtney Cronin's feed, the Jalen Johnson would, you know, those youngsters. This is the first time that rookies have been with veterans.
Right.
Not everybody was there, but most of the veterans were there.
Robert Quinn wasn't there, I don't believe. There were a couple of other vets that were not there.
But those Brisker and Gordon were running with the twos, according to Courtney. And she asked Jalen Johnson, you know, should they earn their spot? What's your opinion? Do you think these guys should earn their spot, or should they get thrown into the fire right away? Jalen Johnson said, throw them right into the fire. It's why we took them. So he'd rather, like, maybe it's just a mini camp thing, an OTA thing, and maybe early. Like, remember, Urlacher didn't start right away, which I thought was silly. And they even played him an outside linebacker. But this is a rebuilding team. I want to see as many first-team reps for every youngster as possible so we can find out what they are.
Yeah, they don't have Jalen Ramsey on this roster. So, you know.
Just Jalen Johnson.
Yes, okay, that's fine. And you know, he does some nice things. But I mean, my expectation is that Kyler Gordon is going to start week one, barring some sort of, you know, unforeseen happening or some knock on wood, some injury. My expectation is he'll start. I think he's less of the controversial pick than Jaquan Brisker. I think because cornerback is so important, and the Bears gave up, 31 touchdown passes last year, and they needed to get so much better in that position. I think people were a little more chapped about them using another second-round pick on a safety as opposed to a wide receiver. I think Gordon is going to be a guy that most people are going to be high about.
And then Lucas Patrick. You know, Lucas Patrick is now their new center.
He
is a guy who really worked his way up and got respect in Green Bay. He was Aaron Rodgers' center. And today, speaking of soft serve and wine, he was asked by reporters to compare Aaron Rodgers and Justin Fields today. That question was asked. I don't have sound. I'm not leading into sound.
I wanted to
hear your thought. There's articles are already floating around that question was asked.
Well, I mean, listen, I'm fine with the question being asked. I mean, what's the answer going to be? Aaron Rodgers is one of the top 10 quarterbacks to ever play the game, and Justin Fields has played one season in the NFL, and it was very uninspiring. Now, again, there were other issues that surrounded his lack of success, but, like, I don't know if you're asking me the style or the tempo. They seem to be different quarterbacks. Aaron gets the ball off really quick. Justin Fields tends to hold it a little bit longer. Justin is a much more athletic quarterback than Aaron Rodgers. I don't really see at this point any similarities between the two.
This is what Patrick did say. Here's the quote from Courtney Cronin's feed about Patrick's. So he goes, look, this is like comparing an apple to an orange. So I'm glad he didn't even bite on that. Lucas Patrick's then just basically spun it as his first impression of getting to know Justin Fields. And he says fast. He can get moving pretty quick. It's like the ball gets faster in the air. Couldn't have a better start to a working relationship. So
that's all good. I read a quote, too, from Trevor Siemian, one of their backup quarterbacks, and what he had to say was that Luke Getsy's offense is very easy to pick up quickly. And that was something that stayed with me, that, look, you know, we could try to impress ourselves with the terminology and the brilliance of this offense, or we can actually put together something that works and is schematically correct and is easy to grasp and just is very functional. That, to me, was the quote that resonated most, is that this is a quarterback-friendly system where you know, you're not going to get all tied up and twisted up in some of the terminology. It's a quarterback-friendly system that will play to the strengths of the QB. And it sounds like all of the reviews of Getsy are positive. I get it. It is. We are just beginning. This is the honeymoon phase, and we all thought that Matt Nagy hung the moon early on.
Yes, but we were on to what offense 2.0? What were they calling that? Like, we loved the 1.0. We loved the introductory course when we were like, okay, here comes 2.0. And 2.0 was like a deuce. It was in the crapper. That's all that was.
No, you're right. And look, I mean, Matt came from Kansas City where he was, you know, coming off of the Andy Reid tree and had worked with Patrick Mahomes and others. And you can draw somewhat of a parallel to Luke Getsy. The hope here is that Luke Getsy's got a much better grasp on what he wants to get done and a much better grasp on what it is that Justin Fields does well and puts him in position to take advantage of the things he does do well and not expose him too much, especially when there's not a ton around him.
Yeah. So. Then this was hot today. And we're going to have much more, I'm sure, about this all day tomorrow on the radio station. I know Carmen and I will dive into it. We were texting about this, too. ESPN has come up with their preseason football power index.
Oh, yeah.
The whole write-up is out there. And it's based on a lot of analytics. And ESPN, even on the bottom of the page, explained that what they've done this offseason is they've revamped the way they figure out the preseason FPI. They've taken out of the equation the gambling angles. Like, they used to figure in what the total number of wins listed in Vegas for their power rankings. Whatever it's worth, I don't know how it impacts it at all. They've taken all that out. So there's an explanation in it, and they talk about all the teams. Right now, according to the new Football Power Index, the Bears, analytically, are the most likely to have the number one overall pick in next year's draft.
That it would not be good, in my opinion. Like, I'm thrilled that they're going to have a first-round pick next year. It's something that I've missed over the last 12 months. But if they finish dead last in the NFL and they're drafting first, what would be most bothersome to you? Because I know what it would be to me.
It's Fields.
Exactly.
Like
if he's not making any progress.
Good, right. Yes. Like, how many teams that really had a quarterback step up in year two and establish himself end up with the worst record in football?
I can't even think. I can't give you an answer. I just know this. If they finish dead last and they have the number one pick overall in the draft in 2023, it's because, not solely because of him, but there's going to be a large component of this that's going to be that the quarterback, for some reason, didn't make any progress at all, and you could be stuck in the hole again.
Injuries happen too, right? I mean, he could get
hurt.
Yes. And then Trevor Siemian's playing a bunch of games
with his bad roster. Yes,
so
that could be.
Like, stuff could happen, right?
But you're already giving Siemian the backup job over Nathan Peterman?
Oh, that's going to be a big fight. Was this when Hoodie and I were in?
Yes.
Yeah, you missed this. Chicago gets hot over a backup quarterback battle.
No kidding.
Siemian against
Trevor
Peterman.
Siemian. Peterman is the guy. Wasn't Peterman the guy that Gruden really liked?
Loved.
Yeah.
And he wasn't very smart. Weren't there moments in Hard Knocks?
Gruden or Peterman?
Yes.
Both. It turns out both. Oh. I think Gruden turns out to be much dumber than we all thought. But Peterman, I always thought, had like weird moments in football games where he did
My money would be on Trevor Siemian to win the backup quarterback battle. I don't know anyone wants to take that bet. I don't know if there's any action that is out there on that. But
I'll ride with Peterman. Let's do this.
Okay, let's bet.
A good backup QB bet.
I would think. I haven't looked at their stats. Loser has to
eat wine and soft serve ice cream together.
No doubt. I'm in. Like, that's not a punishment. I get to eat soft serve ice cream and drink red wine. Like I said,
together.
That's a party every day.
Let me go to Bob in LaGrange. Bobby, you're on ESPN 1000. What's on your mind?
I can't believe what I'm hearing. Trevor Siemian, he couldn't even complete a pass in New Orleans. Come on. Northwestern. Justin Fields, the best quarterback the Bears ever had, period.
We were joking around about Trevor Siemian. First of all, this was a conversation about
who's going to win the backup quarterback spot, Trevor Siemian or Nathan Peterman.
Right, but I'm talking about they want to know about if they finished last place. Trevor Lawrence not in the conversation. Wilson from the Jets not in the conversation. Cousins made all the money. He hasn't done jack. Oh, by the way, Josh Allen played last year. Oh, he didn't get a chance to get the ball in the playoffs. He had four quarters. I'm making an excuse for these guys.
Wide-ranging with Bob.
Yeah, you're all over the place there. Yeah, I mean, on your last point, I'm with you there. Like, I got no sympathy for the Bills on the overtime rule.
I can't believe you think Trevor Siemian is going to beat out Justin Fields for the starting quarterback job, Waddle.
So, you know, 40 minutes, they're suggesting wine and ice cream.
Trevor Simeon's got a better touchdown interception ratio and a better overall quarterback rating.
But here's my thing.
If you want to play the game, I'll play the game with you. I mean, you just didn't want to leave it hanging out there.
Here's the thing, and I want to expand on this tomorrow, is for the Bears to finish last, yes, that's going to be – it's probably not going to be a good thing. But I was thinking about this. Meller was listing all the bad teams, and they're the usual suspects that include – the Jaguars, the Jets, the Giants, Carolina, Falcons. Atlanta. But I don't know if any of them are, like, horribly bad like in past years, right? Shouldn't the Jaguars be better because of what they've done drafting-wise and free agent-wise?
Didn't same the Lions, old song and dance with them. I mean, you would think so, but, like, how many Jets times have some good, of these teams?
Well, that's what I don't know, like... Is there truly a great team in the NFL? And maybe this year, is there truly a really terrible team in the NFL? Like a two-win team. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, four wins could get you the number one draft pick this year, no?
The Jets had four wins last year. The year before that, they had two wins. The year before that, the Jets had seven wins. Like, you know, a lot of these teams stay bad for a reason. The Jags could be one of them. I would expect them to be a little bit better, but... you know, there's a reason why you constantly find yourself drafting high in the first round is because you're perpetually awful.
The Bears will have some of those games against the teams that they're battling for the bottom. They play the Jets. They play the Giants. They obviously play the Lions twice.
They play the Texans, don't they? Don't they have the
Texans? They do. I didn't mention the Texans. That's another
good candidate.
Texans
were 4-13 last year. Giants were 4-13 last year. The Lions, you get them twice. They were 3-13-1. The Falcons were 7-10. Do we get the Panthers?
I don't believe.
No, Panthers like, were 5-12.
Let me think about that. Let me look at the schedule.
Thought they did, but they may not.
Then you may be right. Let me see Bears schedule here.
That's why I'm saying. Look, I get you know all these dire predictions and all, but. You know, I think the schedule, I don't see
no Panthers.
The Carolina Panthers on them.
But I think
the schedule is a little bit more friendly this year, and I think it will keep them out of being one of the worst three or four teams. And again, if we find ourselves bottom five, guys, you're going to be able to draw a direct line between them being horrible and either the coaching staff not getting the most out of Justin or Justin not making much progress or Justin gets hurt. Like, that's not what you want. And that's not what I'm projecting. I think this is a 6 or 7 win team this year. If you find yourself in the cellar, it's going to be for reasons that are going to leave us more than a little bit unsettled going forward.
Guy Meller, do we have time to take Dylan?
If Dylan's quick.
Dylan, we got White Sox pregame, and I know you want to touch on the Sox. You got to be quick here. What's on your mind?
First of all, I don't appreciate the Super Bowl champion, Trevor Siemian Flander.
Okay. Well, noted.
Second of all, Waddle was brought up earlier about how he'd feel better about the White Sox doing well at the end of the season. That's going to be misleading because the end of the season, they only play one team, Houston, that was actually in the playoffs last year. So they're going to be like a fake on a hot streak towards the playoffs because they're not really playing anyone. So that's
last year, for me, it was a combo. Not only did they not perform well against the better teams, but it was more of an issue of them not playing well overall.
And they
were
healthy.
500 team. Yeah, in the second half.
If they're
of the
playing
season.
Well, even if it's against lighter teams and they're
then
healthy,
I'll be thrilled.
And they'll have a chance.
Yeah.
Meller, Tyler, great work. This was a grind, a marathon today. We did it, though.
Rest.
Connor McKnight is coming up next with White Sox pregame. For Waddle, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a great Tuesday night.
Instant classic!
I am really excited.
That was a big thrill.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfour.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No high from you.
What?
No high from you.
I give him more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away. Waddle, waddle. Till the very next day. Bum, 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 bum.
And thank you to all and to all a good night.